when AJ texted me about his gig, like, hey man, I have this last minute gig. There was a small part of me that was like kind of scared because it's a new gig, it's new material. I thought his material was like really good. I was almost intimidated, but I said, yeah, did it. And because of that, that one show that went well, 2.5 years later, we're on the Kelly Clarkson show. So like, don't be afraid ever.
Welcome everybody to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 16.
Today we were super excited to finally welcome one of my good friends, Drew Marshall. Probably one of my favorite interviews with Drew. We just chatted about a whole lot of topics, about Prague, about his journey to Nashville.
Yeah, he's a very honest and open guy, and we need to say really quick, there is a bit of a disclaimer on this episode, and it is that what was about half an hour into the original recording, we realized there was an issue and a lot of it hadn't been picked up. So we had to go back and talk about those sections. So there, it feels a little choppy. So if it does, now you know, it's because we had to go back and say those things again, where ordinarily our format is very much just a regular conversation.
But it makes for some very good humor, and Drew was a total professional. Because, you know, it's actually very difficult to act like it's the first time hearing a story.
Agreed. It was such a good time. Can't wait to see Drew again. And he's got one of those, what are those called? It's like a mustache, but it's on the top of your head.
Mohawk?
Yeah, that's it. I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, Drew's a fashionable guy.
He is.
He's an awesome kick-ass drummer as well. So we hope you enjoy this episode with Drew Marshall. Welcome, Drew.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to
Thanks
have
for
you
having
here.
Me.
Of course.
Yeah,
so I know Drew outside of the drumming world. I guess we met just here in the Jewish community here in Nashville.
Yes, we did.
Which we might be the only two Jewish drummers in town.
I don't know.
Probably
any
not.
Others.
There's probably others. That might be another.
Well, Near Z.
Near Z. Yeah. Oh, he's Jew. Okay. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, actually.
So it's us and Near Z. Great. We have.
Right. Well, that's good. You're in good company.
I guess so. Yeah.
Dude, actually, so his brother lives in Israel, and he's like the top guy there.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm going to Israel in September.
No
and
way.
I hit him up on Instagram, and he's like, dude, hit me. Like, I wanted to get lessons from him.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take at least one lesson from the guy.
That's amazing.
Dude, how cool is that?
Yeah. It's
okay,
going to be awesome.
Wait, when did you say you're going to Israel?
September?
Yeah, like the end of August through part of September.
Okay, are you doing it as part of like the
birthright program?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I already did that.
Okay. I was thinking about doing that.
Because I'm
also ethnically Jewish.
Dude.
Yeah. What?
No way.
Have we not talked about this?
We have talked about this.
No, we have not.
We sure.
I promise you I would remember this.
I swear to you on my life,
I learned something new about you every time, and now you're telling me you're Jewish?
I'm Ashkenazi Jew on my mom's side.
You don't want to say Ashkenazi, though.
How do you actually say it?
Ashkenazi.
Ashkenazi.
Literally,
you're the only person I've ever heard say it that way.
Really?
Yeah.
But that's the only way to say it, really.
Yeah.
Well, did you really decide with Nazi?
Yeah, you can't say Nazi.
Well, I understand why you can't say Nazi and Jew next to each other, but 100% like even Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
Ashkenazi.
That's so weird.
No way.
Yeah.
He says that?
Yeah.
Maybe he said it by accident or something.
Oh man, we got to do a deep dive on this.
Yep.
Well, dude, brother, what's up?
Hey.
Amazing.
It actually turns out, so my whole life I thought I was Italian. My mom was like, she was told she was Italian, and then like literally took a DNA test. Turns out, Jew.
Like, wow.
Yeah. So and embraced it. So like had embraced all the Italian stereotype things, and then immediately
just like
I'm gonna turn on a dime and do, I'm going to become a different kind of stereotype. That was hilarious. I love
dude,
her. She's the best.
What? That sounds like an episode of something.
Yeah,
I just don't know what.
Well, probably like a Kirby Enthusiasm or something.
Yeah.
She really is. She's a character, man.
Dude.
Yeah.
So are you trying to go to Israel then?
Can you actually
go through birthright?
I believe. You're the one who told me about this, dude.
Yeah. Okay. What was it? Like episode one? That was so many months ago.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure you can. Like, I think if one of your parents is Jewish.
Yeah.
And I think it might even go as far back as like a grandparent.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that.
And it's, And because it's you're not technically Jewish unless your mother's Jewish, right? That's the whole idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I don't
they say.
I don't understand what that is, but it is my mom. So
there you go.
We're set. Yeah,
don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just mention Nir Z, you'll be set.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hey, you guys know Nir? I was told to just drop the name.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Who are you?
So there's. I'm going to hit him up for lessons. And then there's another guy. You've probably seen him on Instagram. Yoni.
Madar?
Yeah.
I don't know him.
Yeah. Oh. Dude, he's like, his technique is just like psychotic.
It's true. He's one of those guys, and I love this, that he has learned and mastered like every fringe technique.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can put it. Like he's got push-pull. Mastered. He's got that. Have you ever seen, I think Simon Phillips was the first person I saw do it, where you would play finger style, but he would alternate fingers back and forth and basically do a single stroke roll between these two fingers. And he's like that. Anyway, he's got mountains of those things that he'll just like go on Instagram and be like, all right, here's this. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
How are you also amazing at that?
Yeah, I'm still trying to learn the first thing you showed me.
Like. Right.
And he does these like ridiculous, like one hand is playing a pattern of seven and his left foot is playing something in five. And like, and he also shreds on guitar, righty and lefty.
No.
Yeah, dude.
What is the deal?
I know. It's ridiculous. So I hit him up forever ago about lessons. And he offered like Skype stuff, but since I'm going there, I'm trying to get a hold of him again.
Is that where he is?
Yeah, he's in Israel.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, all right. Dude, oh my gosh.
Yeah, man. Yeah. There's a lot of talent over there, you know?
Yep. Yeah, there certainly is. Dan Mayo. You ever check out Dan?
I forgot about Dan.
I feel like I might actually follow him on Instagram.
You probably do.
Dan is the guy.
He's got those Meinl videos with the ANF drum company set up, right?
Dude.
Oh, electronic music.
Dan is so sick.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the guy who, he basically sounds like a super fast drum machine kind of thing?
Yeah,
or is that somebody else?
He can do the drum machine thing.
Okay.
I'll pull up. Yeah. You know what? We're doing this now.
Joe, can you pull that up? We really need to hire that assistant.
We do.
I keep talking about it.
It's nope. No more sitting on our hands, guys.
Yeah.
Who?
You need somebody that you can boss around, you know?
Who wants to come in here and get yelled at by me? Dan Mayo.
Who wants to be an intern for the podcast and sit in a 10x10 room?
You will not get
Nate
paid
yells
this guy ever.
Yeah, no.
Yes, I know exactly who that is.
Yeah, dude, he's so freaking good. His technique is phenomenal. His choice is amazing.
So creative.
Yeah. Fantastic player. Also a good guy to maybe hit up while you're there.
Oh, he's in Israel.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's awesome. I didn't realize.
Yep.
I don't know why. I thought that guy was local.
I wish. Mm. He might have moved. I mean, Nashville's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, no kidding. When you said he played on the ANF kit, like for some reason that just feels like something that only Nashville guys play. Does that make sense? Or is that like, maybe not?
I can see that.
I get that.
Yeah.
I think they're a Texas-based company, aren't they?
I'm not sure.
Just the aesthetic feels.
But I haven't seen anybody here in town with one.
It's a
but
very,
I know what you mean.
It's very hip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like an East Nashville home studio with an ANF kit.
Yeah. 1,000%. Yeah.
You walk in.
And a nut shaker on the cymbal, right?
Always. Uh-huh. Always.
Have you walked in and seen there's that ANF snare on the rack in Forks? It's like $2,500. I'm like, well then.
It's like 10 inches, right?
Yeah. I want to get.
Deep?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, they're so expensive. They're real. Oh my gosh, they're very expensive, but they do sound amazing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing company.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting to get the Black Beauty. That's like, that is probably my next actual like drum purchase, I think.
Oh,
it's just, you can't go wrong. They're just perfect.
How many snares do you have?
I just have two. Okay. I have an Acrolyte, which you know, amazing. And then I have the Tomahawk Mapex. It came with my kit, the Armory kit.
Yeah.
And that drum is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's so versatile. And every time I play it, I get somebody asking, like, oh, how'd you do that? And it's usually when I tune it lower. Like, at low tunings, it just sounds amazing.
Really?
But also, when you crank it, dude, it sounds like, you know, like Chad Sexton. Like, it cranks.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Is it a 6.5? 14?
I think so, yeah.
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 Well, it's no pearl, but you know.
Touché.
We were talking about that before.
I've only, I think I might have mentioned this to you, but I've only played like one pearl kit that I can really remember recently. And it sounded fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Really?
But yeah.
Is it just at a venue? Like a house kit?
Is that my friend's house?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah. And that's something like I don't know as much about as other drummers. I'm not like super what's the word?
Like gear snobby.
Yeah. You know? Like yeah. I know that every drum company has the ability to make a really good drum set.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And I've just been playing Mapex forever.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It just felt like the next logical thing. Like, all right, I need a new one. Armory.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. So. Well, and you're 100% right. That's the kind of the thing. There's no real rational person out there who is going to be like, well, I play these guys and this other company doesn't, they just don't make good drums. I'm like, that's totally absurd.
Yeah.
They're a huge company for a reason. If they made bad things, people just wouldn't buy
them. They wouldn't be in business.
Yeah, that doesn't work like that. It is a meritocracy. Like, obviously, the top-end Yamahas, Pearls, all the DW, all the Thomas stuff, Mapex, it's all going to be fantastic. And then it's just a matter of what you like best.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Well, so, I'm just asking about the snares because I only recently started just going bananas and collecting just crap loads of them. Like it's not every time I go to Forks. Don't hear that, wife. I'm not secretly buying snares every time.
But every time you go, you want to buy a snare. Yes.
Yeah, but it is like every month I'm buying like every.
So you
maybe
wake up
two.
With the intention of purchasing a new snare drum. Is what I hear.
I feel like
I think
an
you
addict.
Go to bed with the intention
yeah,
of also.
Yeah, you know how like an addict will be like, I intend not to do the thing, and then just end up doing the thing, whatever the thing is.
Yeah. Sure.
I intend not to do whatever, but I'm going to the place that triggers me. I'm going to Forks. I just need to get some sticks.
Right.
Look at that. oak.
Oh, it's
stave?
On sale too.
Oh, dude.
Have a good sale.
I bought a Hendrix snare.
I thought they made cymbals. No.
I don't think so.
I've never heard of that brand.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Anyway. Not to derail any further, but I had to ask about the snares. Get that Black Beauty and report back to me because
it's on my list.
Next on my list. So
yep, 10 lugs, just gorgeous.
Yeah, I guess why don't we start with for those that don't know you, you know where you're from and who you're playing with. You've had some pretty cool gigs in the past few months. Definitely want to talk about those.
Yeah.
Opportunities.
Yeah, well, 2022 has been by far my busiest year professionally,
yeah,
which is really cool. So my name's Drew Marshall. I'm from South Florida, and I lived in L.A. for about 4 years after college, playing in like a speed metal band and then a pop rock band.
Sick.
Yeah, it was a wild time. And all of those are like stories within themselves. The pop rock band that I started, I managed to get them a record deal through just like really random coincidences of things that happened. And the record company treated us like gold, and they actually moved us to Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
Yeah, because we were touring around here a lot. And they said, if you played like 4 shows a week for a full year, we'll cover your rent, which was like insane. Yeah. And after a year, the needle hadn't moved at all. So I kind of like backed out. And then shortly after that, the band kind of fizzled. Mm. But that's how I ended up here.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty nuts.
Dude, love that.
So when was that? What year did you actually move to Tennessee?
I believe it was 2017 or 2016, okay. This summer. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep. We actually moved to Clarksville because we didn't really research like how close it was to Nashville.
Mm.
And we were like, oh, well, Clarksville's way cheaper. So we just moved there, not knowing that it was like an hour away.
Yeah.
But
it is cheaper and it's awesome.
Yeah. Yes. Especially now. Like, there's a lot more going on there than there was even when I lived there.
Yep.
So, yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear some of those stories. I guess first, just tell us quickly, like, who you're currently playing with and kind of what you're currently up to.
Yeah. So I currently play with, I guess you could say, like, 4 recurring artists. AJ Smith. Really, really talented pop guy. I play with him the most right now. this sort of like AC country singer, Emily Blackbird. She's awesome. This girl, Sycamore, she's from Canada. And I guess you could say it's country-ish. It's like definitely country, but also like kind of folky and just not your typical Nashville, you know, country.
Yeah.
And a good friend of mine, Joshua Micah, who he hasn't, well, he put out a song in February with Owl City, actually.
What?
Yeah, but that was his first single in like 3 years because he put out two songs that did really well. And then we were touring on that. And then COVID happened and just, you know,
yeah,
just threw a wrench in the whole wheel. But I guess I have to go backwards a little bit. But
yeah, definitely.
So when I was living in LA, I was working at a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And this dude walked in and he just looked like a musician. And so he comes in, he orders coffee. And I'm like, hey, dude, do you play music? He's like, yeah, I just moved here 3 days ago, blah, 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 blah. And that was this dude, Josh. And
did he have rings on?
I don't know if he had rings, but he had like a necklace and a tank top. And it, his hair was like, you know,
yeah.
Up. He probably did have rings on. ripped jeans for sure.
Yeah.
And so Josh started coming to the Starbucks all the time. And at some point, his roommate like had to move out. And so there was an opening at his place. He was like, dude, why don't you move in? I said, yeah. And as soon as I heard a song that Josh was working on, I was like, dude, you have to let me play drums for you. I was just like, and he was like, okay, yeah, sure. And so I was playing in this pop rock band at the time and moved to Tennessee. All the while, Josh was still doing his thing.
Yeah.
And he put out these two songs that sort of went viral. And so when the rock band kind of fizzled, around that time, Josh was like, hey, man, I'm going to move to Nashville. And so he and I moved in together. And with Josh, that was my first ever like bus tour. The first time I ever played to tracks was with him. And, you know, because I came from like the metal and I also love Prague. I was playing a lot of Prague before all that.
Yeah, buddy.
So like, yeah, dude. So, you know, playing the backing tracks and I always recorded to a click, but playing to a click, like that was totally foreign to me. So fortunately, everything that I've done has been kind of like a smooth easing into each level, you could say.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like a lot of times everybody that has some kind of goal in the arts, we see on TV, you get plucked from obscurity and you're singing in your house and then suddenly you're playing in arena.
Yes.
And like if we actually had to do that, we would freak out.
Yeah.
You know, yep. A lot of people, like we probably couldn't handle that. I don't think.
Yeah. But, well, that's it's the same as winning the lottery you don't know how to handle that. You don't have the infrastructure to deal with that.
Yeah.
That's why those people that happens to end up poor.
100%. Yeah. That's a really good analogy. Yeah. So I'm super happy that every level up, you could say, has been just like, you know, baby steps.
Yeah.
And like I remember.
Super linear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when this band I started, we were in the studio with this guy, Dave Darling, who to me, he's the sickest producer ever.
He worked with Motley Crue and Def Leppard, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He did some stuff with Motley, Def Leppard, Jack Johnson. And now he's doing like the Temptations. I know.
Okay.
It's crazy. And he's just like so hip. Like his ideas are so cool. But he was the first producer that told me I was overplaying. And this was like 7 years ago. Yeah. And he was like, too many ghost notes, too much this, like do less. Because again, I came from the prog world.
Right.
And so that's just one other example of like a tiny baby step in refining, you know, my abilities as a professional kind of thing. So it's been cool that, you know, everything is just small little levels up as opposed to going from the garage to, you know, main stage at whatever country festival kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I really dig what you're saying about leveling up and kind of how your journey has been kind of.
Oh, yeah. Baby steps.
Yeah. Baby steps to kind of, you know, hone your craft as this kind of wholesome drummer. But I think it's also, you know, related to you as being very open-minded and it seems like you have a very go-getter kind of attitude. Talk about that a little bit. Where does that come from? And
yeah.
How's that?
So, yeah, definitely. So As far as like drum stuff goes, especially in the past like 7 years, have had a super strong go-getter kind of attitude. I don't really know when it started because all throughout like middle and high school, I was just so into drumming that you didn't have to tell me to work on it. You know, I was just like doing it. But when I was in college, I had this thought in my head that I wanted to move to LA. I don't know where it came from, but I was just like, that's where I'm going.
Right.
Yeah. Cause in South Florida, there isn't like a rock scene really, right. You know, yeah. Or a metal scene.
I was going to say, I know where the thought came from. It makes sense. Yeah. I know what's going on in LA. So,
yeah, fair. Like, yeah. Yeah. And so I actually, this was like 2011, and I noticed that at the time you could easily judge a city's music community by looking at Craigslist and seeing how active it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I searched every city, New York, Chicago, Nashville, even like Dallas, I don't know, like everywhere.
Yeah.
And the LA Craigslist back then and still has like hundreds of postings a day. And so every day I would just comb through it. And I saw this one ad that said like traveling metal band needs drummer for tour. And I sent them a YouTube video, which at the time was like, you know, cutting edge.
Yeah.
Auditioning online. And so on my last day of college, they called me and told me that I got the gig.
Dig
I was
it.
Like, fuck yeah. So I went home and this was like, you know, some of these songs were really long, pretty technical stuff. And it was 10 songs I had to learn and I had 10 days. So I learned like one song a day, which at the time that was like really difficult. Yeah. And now, you know, we have to learn sometimes 10 songs in a day, yeah, like just yeah. to like get through a gig.
Yeah.
But at the time that was like extreme. So 10 days later, I was on a flight to LA and like a week after that, we were on the road.
Wow.
And ever since then, there was just something in me, almost like a desperation, like I need to be successful, you know?
Yeah.
And so that kind of drove me a lot. And up until very recently, that drove me. That drove everything. And now I'm trying, like we were saying before, not to like force things so much. Because I think that in Nashville, especially in Nashville, it's easy to kind of lose yourself in the hustle. And it's easy to lose your unique identity as a drummer in Nashville.
Yeah.
And I think it's sick that you're into prog. I'm super into prog. But
and we need to have a conversation about that.
Oh, in a minute. I am extremely down. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the Nashville ethos, a lot of the gigs that we play are like 2 and 4 backbeat, you know?
Yep.
And so I think it's very easy to like lose yourself in the relentless pursuit of success.
Yeah. Kind of fall into that bucket.
Yeah.
That's been created around the city and, you know,
and
genres.
But, I mean, look, if you want to get paid to play music, there's really no other place, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. But as far as, you know, being driven, every opportunity I've ever had, I would go, like, psycho, like, beyond 100%.
Yeah.
And so, another example. So, when I started this rock band, I didn't have a car. I was living in LA and it would take 3 hours for me to get to rehearsal every day. Well, we wouldn't rehearse every day, but every time.
Yeah.
And so I was working like almost full time and band practice days, I would leave 3 hours before practice, take like 3 trains and a bus, get there and then do the same thing on the way back.
Jeez.
And I didn't even think about it because, you know, I just kind of
just what you had to do.
Yeah. You know? And so, yeah, it was insane. And every project after that, like when I started playing with this guy, Josh, I had to learn like 14 or something songs. And I learned like every single, just every, not just hits, not just sections, but like, you know, if there was a ghost note somewhere, I would learn it, you know? And you could argue that that's like detrimental at some point, you know, because I've been on gigs where I don't have a lot of time to learn a song and I'm making a whole fucking elaborate chart.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not that serious, but sometimes, you know, that has never, it has never failed me when preparing for a gig.
Of course, yeah. Because you can always pull back from that.
Right.
And this came up with talking to Jed. Like, he, kind of a similar approach. He would learn every part of every song and chart it. And then just to have that context for then when he plays it live, he could then decide to, at least he has an understanding of where certain fills, why those things were chosen on the record. And he would watch like the YouTube videos and the live videos as well.
Yeah. Ben too, because he was saying, Ben was saying that he would do complete charts. He's like, I actually transcribed every note. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's how he would learn these songs he was working on. I'm like, that's real. Obviously, that's so much more work than just being like, yeah, okay, this section. All right, up to the ride for here. And then four on the floor over here. I'm like, dude,
yeah,
that's so much more work, but really, you know, it's like you said. You can always pull back from that, but that means you really had them fucking mastered.
Yeah, and it can be a blessing and a curse, you know?
And that mastery can come in different forms. Like, it could be, like, physically writing out charts, but it could also just be listening a bunch.
Yeah.
So that's where every drummer has unique, like, the way we learn is different.
Yeah.
You know?
And one thing I love about making my crazy charts is, if I practice it enough, I have an image of the chart in my head. And so, if I'm playing a song, I can, like, visualize it and remember where things are.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means I have a photographic memory, because it doesn't, like, I don't remember photos of other things, but when it comes to charts, if I do it enough, it's there.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Well, I have a theory about that, because for me, playing is a very synesthetic experience. Like, especially like playing polyrhythmic stuff, I see it. It's this shape, and during this part of the pattern, this part lights up and it moves throughout this shape. That's just how it works for me.
Yeah. Oh, dude. But I want to hear more about that.
I didn't know about
that. But I think that's probably the same for you with the charts as you're playing through. You're like, you can see it. Like, mm-hmm. So you have this visual representation of the thing you're actually playing.
Yeah. Are you talking about, like, do you see the score? Or are you, like, you're just seeing the chart that you've written out? Go a little bit deeper into that. What are you actually seeing? Yourself hitting the drums, or the
no? I mean, I see shapes, shapes in space. Yeah,
so it's a more abstract thing.
Yeah,
interesting.
And they're like, they'll kind of like light up in different spots during as something's like depending on what pattern
you're
playing.
Let's say you're playing let's say you're playing "We Will Rock You."
Yeah,
and that's all you're playing.
Yeah,
how might that look? Well,
that doesn't even.
You know,
that doesn't even do it. That doesn't activate the thing.
Oh, okay, so it has to be busier.
If it's, I mean, specific. It's very specific for for polyrhythms, because I have to have something to represent it in my head. It doesn't just like that. Won't just things that don't come naturally. You know, you really have to be kind of academic with it to start, and then eventually you have to turn it into an instinct. And the way I've turned it into an instinct apparently is like I see these shapes and they just I'm like, oh, okay, well, when I'm over here, when it gets to this part in the shape, this is what I'm playing. And
that's so cool.
Dude, actually, and that's really well said too, because whenever we're learning anything, it always starts as academic.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have to kind of let go a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes. You know? Well, it should be that way to start, but like if you don't do it that way, then you won't learn it very well. Like
that's true.
You're like, you very can come true. In and be like, well, I can, well, this section is this, and I can tell it's like what it's kind of this way, and this is the way I would approach it. I'm like, well, that's not, then you're not really learning it.
Well, to that point, like, and talking about obsessively learning stuff. So this artist Sycamore that I play with, Rich Redmond played drums on her record, and it is a fucking drum clinic for me. Yeah. Like it is a perfect work of art in how to play in a, you know, like commercial sort of country setting.
Mm-hmm.
But his choices to me are like gorgeous. Like there's so much life, and to me it feels like there's intention in it, you know?
Yeah.
And so because I learned those parts so closely, every fill, everything, now like my instinct when I'm playing with other artists is to like pull from that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And so, but if I had just taken it casually and just kind of been like, okay, so we're doing this and then we're doing the ride thing, like that would have just been, you know, it's like the equivalent of something going in one ear and out the other, you know?
And like, so I was talking with a buddy of mine who plays drums for Parliament. And he was saying,
wow.
He was like, dude, he's like, so when you copy, you're just kind of doing your version of someone else's thing. But when you steal, it goes in your bag. What you did was you stole, like you could take, and that's like, that's what you should do as an artist. You should steal everybody's shit. Basically be like, okay, I like that. I want it. I want to have access to that within myself. That's the shit.
Dude, well, yep. Someone famous said it, like great artists, or yeah, no, like good artists create, great artists steal, or something like that.
Yeah. Picasso. Yeah.
Oh, okay,
good artists borrow, great artists steal. That's
something
right.
like
yeah.
that, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and inevitably, you know, stealing can result in, how do I say this? Like, I remember, like, Travis Barker growing up was my biggest influence.
We're going to have a conversation about that in a minute,
yes!
too.
I can't wait.
I've asked everyone who has said
– three in a row, I think.
I have asked everyone who has said that the same question. I'm going to ask you it in 2 seconds. Say what you're saying.
I can't fucking wait. And I learned every beat, learned everything. And I remember going to Guitar Center and seeing drummers, like, play Travis Barker beats.
Yeah.
I was like, that's stupid.
Yep.
But because they were, I guess, borrowing.
Yeah.
But I took it like deep in my soul. And so I consider myself, when I have the opportunity to be like a super creative drummer,
yeah,
because of that, you know?
Yeah. Yes. You have all that influence, you know?
Yeah. What were you going to ask me?
I was going to ask you if you listened to the Aquabats.
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Because that for me is, and you're the first person to say yes when I've asked that question. That for me is Travis at his best.
Interesting.
That Fury of the Aquabats, his playing on Captain Hampton is so ridiculously good. So like it's like ska punk drumming level 10 million.
Yeah.
Just,
dude.
Just the
Different
best.
Level. Yeah.
So I only listened, I knew he played with them. I listened to a little bit of them because my first real band was a ska band.
Okay.
A pop punk ska band.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound fucking crazy, but the original drummer of this band is Mark Anino. Do you guys know him or know that name?
I know that name.
He plays for Morgan Wallen.
No way.
Yeah. And we grew up like in the same scene together in South Florida.
Wild.
Yeah. Bless you.
Bless you.
Yeah, thank you.
And so
that felt phenomenal.
Good. And in high school, it was again random friend of a friend of a friend said like, "Hey, this band Lithium needs a drummer." That was the band we were in, this like ska thing, and and like Mark was the original drummer. He quit to play in like a screamo band. But that band was fucking sick. Also,
yeah.
yeah. No, seriously.
Yeah. Like,
and dude, there was something in the water in South Florida because the band that I was in opened for the Aquabats.
What?
And opened for like Streetlight Manifesto.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Lit. In high school,
dude.
In high school.
That's
and,
crazy.
And Mark's band opened for like Coheed and Thursday and like all these like,
yeah,
like top of the top screamo type band. Well, not Coheed, but Hawthorne Heights, like all these bands. Yeah, it was just such a small world. And also, Joe Bart, who plays with Priscilla Block, he used to come to Lithium shows back in the day. Like, South Florida, man.
Man, what is
wow.
Yeah.
Small world.
Yeah. Wild. I have no idea where
there
I was going
There is something
with
in the
that.
Water, and it's alligators.
Touche.
Yeah.
Touche.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And also, you know, going back to, like, the baby steps of, you know, success, quote unquote, like, Lithium was the first band I ever had to sound check a drum set with. You know, I remember they were like, give me the snare, and I'm doing like marching stuff and all
yeah,
these,
right.
You know, and my friend looked back at me. He's like,
play one.
Yeah. I was like, oh shit. Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
you know,
you don't want me to do like a performance.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. You play like a rudimental solo from high school or something.
That's what I did, you know, because I was like 15 playing at a club that I couldn't get into. You know? And it was like, full kit. I'm like, okay. You know, just like doing all that stuff.
That I can do.
And
like, drum solo time.
Yeah.
don't mind if I do.
Yeah. But Travis Barker, man. I actually think he's underrated in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because
I feel like people think he's either underrated or overrated. There's no in between.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know anybody that thinks of him as underrated, personally. but yeah, I think I like it's those
usually
people.
Overrated.
Yeah,
I think because of his success.
I think he's simultaneously both.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly, yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
and we can go deep into that, what, if you want. But I think there's he's a very very good player, and he's got this pretty specific domain where he's just super killer, but I'll also at the same time people be like, they'll show me be like, dude, this is so amazing. I'm like, well, no, I mean, that's kind of, that's okay. Like, it's like, yeah. Not, didn't blow me away, but I'm like, yeah, it's whatever. Oh, but he's also a phenomenal this. And I'm like, no, he's a passable those things. I'm like, but again, you put him in the right domain and he's just annihilates. Just yeah. Like, he's just like, that's his thing. So that's why I would say he's both.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just say he's overrated because the people who say that, they don't really like do a deep dive. They're just like, well, he's dating a Kardashian. He's like so famous. Like they just think he's Hollywood.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. Why do people care?
Yeah.
But here's something that I've thought about. So his main act forever has been Blink-182. And for me, especially Enema of the State, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, and Self-Titled. Like those are, you know, like God tier for me. But yeah,
they're fucking amazing.
Yeah. But Travis Barker was given a super difficult job because there is not a lot of variation in tempo in any of those songs. So he's creating all of these completely different drum parts for every song.
Yeah.
Which to me is like, that's a fucking challenge, you know? Mm-hmm. Because you're basically either doing, you know, or I'm doing a double with my foot, but you can't hear it. You know, it's just like, how do you keep that fresh?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about that.
For three records.
Yeah.
That's, you know? It's true. And that's the part where he's underrated.
Exactly. You're
like, dude, yeah. His parts are so freakishly iconic. Like, literally, he's the guy in that genre because of what he did for that band.
Right.
The end. There's no guy above that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Travis is a freaking beast.
Yeah. And also, the freedom that he had. You listen to pop punk bands today, and it's all just like super gridded. There's nothing cool being played.
Yeah.
You know? It's like just those same beats, but without any of the joy and the spirit that Travis brought. You know? That's how I feel about it. Yeah. So,
well, you ever see that video of them playing, I think it was Big Day Out in Sydney, where they played Damn It?
I don't know.
So obviously it does that guitar intro.
Yeah.
But instead of that that Scott did, he comes in with boom, scam, 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 take your pants off. Dude, it's like,
beautiful. It's beautiful.
Oh. That is so cool. I could gush about the things I love about that guy for a while. Anyway, yeah,
same.
Yeah. We need to have a Travis Barker episode.
Please bring
a round
back.
Table. We just,
I am in it. I call the seat at the table. Yep.
might not be any room for anybody else. But that's
fair.
Okay.
Yep, you'll be at the head of the table for sure.
Excellent.
So I like this discussion about like learning other people's parts. Have you had much experience? Do you write your own drum parts? Or like for AJ, for example, for any other artist you work with?
Yeah, totally. A lot of it is within the confines of the track.
Sure.
Because, you know, AJ still uses tracks. Josh uses tracks. So it just depends on how much is left in the track, you know? Because sometimes when we're playing the tracks, like the entire drum part is in it. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to play the kick where the kick is and the snare where the snare is, you know? But I always find a way to put myself in it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it just depends on the song. But yeah, and I find that especially fun, actually. One thing that I do probably more than any drummer I know is like cymbal crescendos. Like I'm always doing cymbal crescendos.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Going into parts and stuff. And when I play in like rock bands for fun, that's when I just feel like boundless, you know, because that's when there's nothing confining you at all.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and that is something that I still really want to do creatively is to play in a band like King's X, best band in the world, wherever the camera is.
Yeah.
because, like, you know, and that band is like prog-ish. Yeah. And they have a lot of songs that are just like, you know, 4/4 soul.
If you don't think that King's X is a prog band, I defy you to listen to the song We Were Born to Be Loved and tell me that's not a prog band.
Yeah, right?
That like 2.5 minute ending is the...
Have you seen them live?
No.
Dude. Live? It's so cool. It's fucking awesome. I'm like... I don't know if I would say Die Hard. I'm a very, very, very big fan. And, I've gone super deep into their repertoire. And they also have a lot of songs that are, like, just super soulful and, like, not proggy to me.
You're a Die Hard. You know how I know you're a Die Hard?
How?
Because you asked me if I like King's X out of the clear blue sky. So, yeah.
Touche. Yep. I absolutely am. And it makes my...
Trying to
cover it up. Yeah, right? Like, hey, man.
It's coming to her the T-shirt on.
Yeah. It's like, you know how when you're a little kid and, like, you get into something, you're like, you can't help but just ask everybody if they like it, too?
Dude,
that
was
like,
yes.
That was that. You're like, so do you like King's X?
Yeah, right? Like, yeah. When I was five, I was like, hey, do you like the Power Rangers?
Yeah.
I was like, same thing.
That's it. Yeah. We're all just big kids, and you embraced that perfectly at that moment. I was like, hell yeah. I was so glad you asked it, too, because I was going to ask you, I was going to bring it up during this whole thing. I was like, he's wearing King's X shirt. I fucking love King's X. Let's have a conversation.
For me, there's like... few things that make me happier than when somebody recognizes my King's X shirt.
Yeah.
They're like, dude! And I'm like, yes! You know? Oh, just it makes several days when it happens once.
Yeah.
I know you had some pretty recent cool opportunities with Kelly Clarkson, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
So... I met AJ through this dude, Zach Green, who I call the mayor of Nashville. He's around our age and he knows like everybody. This is hard to repeat, you know?
I know.
Sorry guys. This, if any of this is staying, I just want everyone to know that the reason that this is sounding awkward in this moment is because, unlike the rest of the stuff, which is totally organic and just a conversation that we're having, we're trying to cover stuff that got accidentally, the recording ceased earlier on. Yes. So we're just recovering some of the stuff we talked about.
I think this happened, I think it was my episode where we got totally jacked up and we had to redo the whole interview.
That's right.
And it was just, it's not the same, you know? Like, it's,
yeah, totally.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I will say we are handling it better.
Drew's handling it very
and
well.
You're handling it incredibly.
Yes. Thank you. So we appreciate it.
We were both very sad when that happened to us.
I see.
I just spent an hour asking you questions and it felt so normal. And now I'm going to have to pretend I've never heard the answers to these questions.
God, that sounds brutal.
Yeah.
Well, to briefly tell the story. I met AJ through a friend who's named Zach Green. And Zach Green is, I'm fucking dying. I'm dying.
That's okay.
It's so hard.
Let me guess. He's the mayor.
He's the mayor.
He's the governor of,
okay. I'll just skip that part. Okay. Long story short,
this is staying in.
Okay, great.
This is funny.
Yeah. So AJ texted me, and he said that this dude, Zach Green, gave him my number. Zach Green works for BMG now, but he used to work at CSAC. And that was how I met Zach, because I'm with CSAC, and I saw Zach wearing a CSAC badge like 3 years ago, and I just started talking to him. And so AJ said, hey, man, listen, I have this last-minute gig. Zach Green gave me your number. Can you do it? And so I immediately took off work and I started practicing my ass off. And I think it was like 14 songs. And I know that I only had maybe 3 days, which I don't know if that's like a short amount of time. Because I know
it is. It sounds like a short amount of time.
Because like so many drummers, I've heard people learning like 20 songs in a day. Like, I don't know what, the standard can be so high. But for me, that was a lot.
Was that gig here in town?
No, it was at some like small college. I don't even remember where it was, but it was during COVID. It was like
COVID was a thing.
Yeah.
But somehow they still had, well, it was an outdoor show.
Yeah.
But we played the show and it went great. And after that, you know, AJ would just hit me up whenever he had a show going on. So we did a tour in February. It was just me and him, like, through the winter, just, like, slugging it out. Some shows were amazing. Some shows were, you know, typical, like, nightmare tour shows. Yeah. But a lot of them were really good. And so after that, somehow he got word that the Kelly Clarkson show was interested in having him perform. And so, to AJ's credit, he can make anything happen, like, in no time and with no budget, basically. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, or with a small budget. Does he have, like, official management and, like, a team behind him, or is it a lot of DIY?
I think it's both, really.
Yeah.
Like, he does a lot of stuff on his own, and then he has a small team of people who, you know, kind of just, like, it's like they're piloting the plane, but it's on autopilot. That's what I would say about AJ's team.
That's cool.
Hmm. And AJ is the autopilot.
Yeah. And so AJ plays, like, he plays like every instrument too, right?
Basically, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's crazy. He's classically trained on violin.
Oh, wow.
Like, hearing him play a piano solo is like just otherworldly.
Yeah.
And on tour, he plays both. He plays guitar. He plays bass. So anyway, we had this opportunity, and we didn't even know if the Kelly Clarkson thing was actually going to happen. It was on the chance that they might use it.
Yeah.
So he rented a studio either in East Nash or 12 South, and we engineered it ourselves. So I brought my drum mics, and we recorded ourselves, filmed ourselves. This girl, Blair, who's a really great videographer and photographer, did all the video stuff. AJ edited the video, I believe. And we did all the audio. AJ sent it to Mix and Master. And that same day, in that same studio, AJ filmed a music video for a different song. Just to show, you know, like, how agile he is, you know? Like, he's a speedboat. In a world of cruise ships, he's a speedboat.
Dang. I like that. Yeah.
So.
Seems like a really cool, interesting character. I honestly didn't know him until
I
met you and talked about him. But
yeah, man, dude, he's awesome.
Seems like he's definitely making waves and
going
places for sure.
Yeah, and we're doing a week of these So Far shows.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't know, they can just fucking look it up because I don't want to talk about it.
Yes.
So eat it, everyone listening.
He's like, screw it. You weren't here for the original. Like, you missed it.
Oh, man. This is so fun. I'm having so much fun on this podcast. I'm sorry if I'm not being, like, totally professional here.
No,
dude.
You're being very professional.
Yeah. Okay, great.
So the Clarkson gig actually did air, right? It was back in April, right?
Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah, and so that was the thing. We did it all here. Like, we never met her.
Right, it was a virtual thing.
Yeah, because they're still, like, very COVID conscious out there. So, but yeah, it happened.
And that was just one song performance?
It was one song. And just last week, they played it again. So I was like, whoa, that's pretty awesome. So I don't know if that's, like, a normal thing or what, but yeah.
Has anything further come through that? I mean, it's a pretty big placement, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of not super in the know of stuff, but, like, I just see, like, he did an interview on Sirius XM today, and he's always doing something, you know, and just, like, building. And I will say one thing I'm stoked about. He asked me to jump on a write with him, because we were on tour, we're talking about meditation, and I was telling him about this meditation group I used to go to in LA. And there was one time when we meditated on this, like, saying, and it was, if death is certain and the time of death is uncertain, what should I do? And it was just asking yourself that for, like, an hour and a half. And so I told that story to AJ, and somehow we got this idea, like, oh, let's write a song, like, called We're All Gonna Die. And like, but we don't know when. So it's like, you know.
Yeah.
And so that turned into a song that's coming out next month.
No,
and I'm awesome. Fucking stoked.
So cool.
Yeah. And, you know,
I've been like writing and producing on my own and in different bands and stuff forever. But since I moved here, I haven't really done a lot of that stuff. So I'm stoked because I think AJ's sick. I think the song's really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Dude, I can't wait for that.
Thanks, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm stoked. So meditation.
Yeah.
You meditate, huh?
I have to.
So you meditate, bro?
Yeah, do you even meditate?
Yeah, yeah. It should be a t-shirt. It probably is.
Right. Do you even have inner peace, bro?
Yeah.
I've been super inconsistent as of late, but I did develop a meditation practice. I started into that a little while before I moved here, and it was huge for a boon from my life. What got you into it?
A therapist I had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when I was in high school, I was just like, you know, I was like the epitome of like teen angst and I just like hated everything and everyone, you know.
Pop punk drummer causing issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. Yeah. And so, but I somehow my parents like found this therapist that just like he got me, you know.
Yeah.
And changed my life in so many ways. And he introduced me to meditation and he did like a guided meditation with me, and that just kind of started it all, you know? And so after that, I was just, you know, like reading books and watching like YouTube videos and stuff. And I don't even, like, it was a meetup group that I found, but it was exactly what I would expect or I would want out of a meditation class, especially in LA where things are like super pretentious.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that way at all. And so I was also super into transcendental meditation for a while. I found this course by an old TM teacher, basically without a lot of the, you know, woo, so to speak.
Yes.
That was like $25 and TM is like $600.
Yeah.
Wow. So I paid $25 for this thing and I was like, oh my God, this is great too. So there's different things. I also do like some Wim Hof stuff. Like the breathing.
Yeah.
Dude, on Birthright, one of Wim Hof's certified instructors was on my trip.
What?
So no kidding.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So we did like this whole breathing thing and it was fucking mind blowing.
Wait, when did you go to Birthright again? Did you mention that?
No, I didn't. December 2019.
Oh, wow.
Right before COVID.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Damn. You've had a busy few years.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I have.
That's so cool.
So yeah, I mean, all of that stuff, I'm like, I'm into it. And I remember I did the Wim Hof stuff before an audition once that I was kind of nervous for, and it just like totally chilled me out, and I got the gig. So
dude, that's amazing.
Yes,
yeah,
dude. Okay, it was multiple times. Late last year, I was playing a lot of late nights, so I had 10 to closes on Tootsie's Roof, which is like, and it was Thursday through Sunday. So those are like huge shifts, and they're, I mean, just, you know, hundreds of people in that upstairs room. It's a full-blown freaking rock show, and I was feeling I had multiple nights where I was showing up, and I was not feeling well. I felt a little queasy, and I'm like, I'm queasy, and I'm nervous going because I had just started doing this thing full. I had done like sub work here and there, and then I was like, okay, now I'm doing this full time, and I felt like there was a lot riding on it for me personally. There was a ton riding on it because I quit everything in order to do that.
Good on you.
And I just sat in my car and just did. I'm like, I'm just going to put on his little meditation and like, breathe. In.
Yeah, he rolls the R.
I got to listen to him.
Like a wave.
Dude, you sound exactly like him.
I do pretty good impressions.
Yeah. Dude, no kidding, man.
And I remember every time I would do that, I would get done and go, and sometimes I wouldn't even do the full three times through as he does. I'm like, I would just maybe do maybe once or even just twice. And that would, like, I would just feel so much better. Like, it would settle my stomach. It would settle all my nerves. And I'd go, all right, cool. I'm good to go. Like, I honestly thought I was going to throw up a couple nights. I'm like, I don't know if it was nerves or if I was just sick. I probably, maybe a combo. But I just got through that. I'm like, okay, just going to sit here and his meditation, if you haven't done it, it's more, it's like a marathon more than it is like a really calm experience. It's like, it's jarring, yeah. but it it's, yeah.
Yeah, like the result is amazing.
How long do those sessions last, or can it be different variations?
That particular one is 11 minutes long.
Okay, it's not too bad.
And it's...
Yeah, well, because...
It's a game changer.
Yeah, because you do these 30, like... You kind of start, like, hyperventilating on purpose.
Yeah.
And then it... You do 30 breaths, and then you hold your breath for as long as you can.
Yeah. First breath hold is 1 minute, and then the next two are 1 minute and 30 seconds.
Minimum. Damn. Like,
Yeah.
And so, like, they call, you know, some I heard someone say, like, they call it breath work for a reason.
Yeah.
But afterwards, like, the result, like, it's just amazing.
Dude.
It's awesome.
Well, and the great thing is, in the video, he starts talking about he's talking you through what you might be experiencing, and he's also guiding you. He's like, pay attention to the blood running through your veins, pay attention to your heart beating, and he just says, feel.
Yeah.
And I remember
feel.
That's how he says it. Yes. Yeah, dude. I remember this moment when I had just started doing that. It was maybe my. Just I'd only done it a couple times, but I was going through a lot. It's like a lot, the most intense stuff that has ever happened in my life. I was in the midst of that, and I just was going through it, and I just like started weeping. And I'm like, wow, this is really good stuff, because I didn't know that. I mean, I knew the stuff was going on, but I didn't know that I needed to get this out. Yeah. And that, yeah, dude. Game changer.
So powerful.
Yep.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah.
I remember we all took a picture afterwards, and everybody was just like, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say glowing, because that's very, like, you know, woo. But like,
yeah.
Exactly. The glow up. Yeah. But yeah, like, just the look on everyone's faces was, like, different.
Yeah. You know?
It was awesome. But so you mentioned... Like, you didn't know if it was, like, nerves or just, like, feeling sick or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever feel, like, do you guys get stage fright ever?
I get nerves pre-show, even, like, driving to the gig, parking, all those steps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just picturing Broadway. I've only done Broadway a few times, but, like, rolling the cart through the gig, like, all those things, setting everything up, mic soundcheck. But then as soon as I play, like, the first groove, the first hit, I'm, like, pretty much good to go.
Yeah.
For me, at least. I know everyone's probably a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on the gig too. For bigger venues, I'll definitely feel it more.
Yeah,
but
I don't anymore, really. Maybe if it's a brand new thing, somebody I've never ever played with before, and I'm very unfamiliar. But I generally speaking, I don't. And one of the cool things about having done Broadway now for full time for what, a year and a half, I guess. You end up playing with so many people you don't know, and you just kind of have to jump in and do the thing. Like, it kind of eliminates that feeling of like, well, what if I mess up? What if I'm like, well, it's just going to be what it's going to be. And I'm like, and you'll even hear them say, like, oh, well, like, do you know this and this? Like, no, I don't know it. And I'm like, ah, don't worry about it. Like, just feel it out. It'll be what it's going to be. You're like, It really will. Yeah, things are going to be fine. It's totally fine. I don't really get nerves now because of that. Yeah. Which is nice, because I used to get them really bad.
Really?
Yeah.
How about you? I mean, you're playing with a bunch of different artists, kind of juggling act of different different people, and you also do various. I just saw you a few weeks ago.
Where was
that show at?
The Bowery.
Yeah. That was I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you deal with that?
If it's the first time with a new artist, there's always a little bit of nerves, but kind of like with you, you know, once I'm in it, it's basically gone. Unless I've played with an artist a while ago, and this was like an extremely stressful show, because this artist kept changing the set list, like kept saying, don't learn that, learn this.
Yeah.
They were like messing with the Ableton session.
No.
And so like... Even the count-offs, like some of the songs had a 2-bar count-off. Some of them had just like a 1, 2. And it was just like, it was a fucking nightmare. And so in a situation like that, I'm nervous the whole fucking time.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm just like, you know.
Yeah.
But that scenario only happened once. Otherwise, it's kind of funny because even if you have no time to prepare for a gig, I feel like that would actually, it should make you less nervous because you can only do so much, you know? Some people might expect you to be perfect, but yeah. In actuality, the less time you have to prep, I kind of feel like the more grace you should be given.
I feel like, too,
in a way, you know? It's like,
I feel like, too, in those situations, you're at like a heightened sense of like extreme. Like, you got to be on it because you're not really prepared, so you have to just kind of use your instincts, which is, a lot of times is a good thing.
Yeah, and sometimes...
Because you're not sucked into the charts or, like, the count-offs. You're just like, let me just trust my actual natural abilities and the time in the practice room and who I am as a musician, mm-hmm. and it's going to just work out.
Yeah, and it's funny because I like situations like that way more than something that I was prepping for a week, you know? Because it's like, I don't know, it feels like less pressure in a way for some reason.
Yeah.
You know? Even though you still want to do great, like, it's not, you're not going to half-ass it, but yeah.
No, I agree, because the reality of it stands in the way of pressure. You're like, well, I can't expect myself to be perfect, nor should anyone expect me to be perfect. Therefore, I won't hold myself to that, but I'm obviously going to try to play to the best of my abilities, and as you said, not half-ass it.
Yeah.
But I'm totally willing to give myself tons of grace on all of this. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I missed this two-beat bar here after the bridge. Oops. Oh, I wonder why I missed that. Big deal. And life goes on.
Yeah. And funny enough, that gig that I was thinking of, it was two shows, like a Thursday, Friday or something. The first show was rough. The second show, I was like, well, you know what? Fuck these people. I'm not going to give a shit, and I'm just going to play.
Yeah.
And because the expectations were so unrealistic, and it ended up being really great for me. Yeah. I was like, all right, you know, which is funny, you know?
Yeah.
And I got to tell you guys more about that off the record, because I got some stories.
yeah, please.
Yeah. Let's fucking talk Prague, dude.
Here we go. Where did you first dip your toes into Prague?
That is a great question. Well, I like when I was a kid, like in elementary school, my dad was playing King's X. So that was probably my first intro.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody told me that Neil Peart was like the greatest. Even to this day, I respect Neil Peart, but I don't like Rush the way some other people do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a couple Rush songs that I heard when I was young that I thought were cool. But I'm trying to think, like, I don't know, because like my, you know, like all of our musical journeys, it's like, you know, it's a slow progression.
Yeah.
You know? So like when I was in middle school, actually, I guess you could say Mudvayne.
Okay.
Yeah. When I was in fifth grade, I was looking for music that would scare me.
Yeah.
And so I was up late one night watching MTV. And do you guys know the song Dig by Mudvayne?
Dude, I was like, Dig.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah. Yeah. The video for that. Yeah. Dude, when I was like 9 or 10, that music video scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I was like, oh my God. That was the first time I heard double bass.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need one of these pedals. And my mom bought me the album. My parents were super cool with that. Like, they just bought me whatever music I wanted. So I guess you could say Mudvayne.
And
there were a few songs on that record that were like out there. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
And so my mom also got me the EP Human Waste by Suffocation. it was like,
oh my God.
I think my mom was so cool for doing that, you know?
Seriously,
I would like go to Best Buy with my mom. Like that was
same.
And I'd be like, hey, I understand that this record is really good and this drummer's playing on it, like, and like it would all, she'd always like make a point to be like, okay, yeah, here you go,
yeah,
get, like, that was
put in the cart.
Yep. That was, I was never wanting for like music that was important to listen to and learn from, but yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So for me, number one was Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and the first song was Tank.
I don't think I know it.
Okay. So Carl Palmer does this wicked drum solo at the back half of the song. And it was actually, so my dad, what he would do is he's a guitar player, and he would put all different kinds of music on in the car, and he would ask me to identify various parts. He'd be like, "What's the violin playing?"
Oh,
and
I would, and dude.
So he was like ear training me without me realizing that I was being ear trained, like as a kid. Be like, "All right, so what's the bass doing? Okay, what's the kick drum doing?" And I would like have to imitate that thing. And then he was, so once I kind of understood drums from that perspective, this is before I'd ever touched an inch, like anything. He was like, "Listen to this." And Carl does this insane snare roll coming out. Just so much power, so fast. And I just remember being like, what? And so I could visualize what was happening. I was like, how can he be physically doing that? And I wanted that. I'm like, that's actually the thing that drove me towards drums. I'm like, I have to understand that as a thing. How can someone do what he's doing? He's playing this crazy role on the snare, and he's also hitting a ride cymbal. Yeah. I'm like, no, you can't do that because he's doing that. So how could he be doing both? Well, he's just that fast. yeah, dude, it was that, and then it was. That was the very, very beginning of my journey.
What made you want to play drums in the first place?
It was probably that, and then a guy that played at my church sometimes, named Donna Jamie, and he was doing his thing, and I was watching him, and I was sitting backstage. They had this big worship service one night, and I just like picked up a pair of his sticks and just started beating on the wall. And I was just back there for like an hour just doing that while I'm like playing along on the wall. And I just kind of went from there. My parents were like, "Yeah,
they're like, damn it, we got a drummer."
Yeah, they put me in lessons. Oh, you need to go to lessons. I really didn't want to do that, but like, all right, we'll do it. But yeah, that's how it started for me.
Yeah. And so with Prog, ELP,
yeah, and then this another song came around called "Party in Simon's Pants."
13.
It's a 17. Yeah.
17.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about this.
It's
that sounds very familiar.
It's Steve Lukather. Dude, I've developed this whole new independence exercise based on that as a motif. But anyway, we'll get around to that after. But yeah, dude. Okay, so that take me through that whole. Your journey through Prog real quick.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's fucking awesome that I guess it was your dad was like ear training you, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because I listen to music now and I pick up all these things and I'm like, man, I wish that somebody had pointed those out to me, you know?
Yeah.
So started with Mudvayne and it's not really Prog, but from there I got super into Slipknot. Mm-hmm. And like Joey Jordison to me is another just like God tier drummer, who we could talk about later. But so I started just trying to learn all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how I made the jump. Like, oh, fuck, I remember now. I got to show you this.
Yep.
Again, South Florida, there was this band called Free Martin. Just three dudes like in high school playing this ridiculous prog. And the drummer was just like, he had as much freedom as Travis Barker. So he was just like flying and playing stuff that was just incomprehensible to me. But I just played it to death and I learned all the songs. And I love it because I felt like I was educated by somebody that like nobody really knows, you know? But after that, I started taking lessons and I got into this band called Gizmachi. Dude.
Don't know them.
We have to listen to some of that later.
Yeah, we will.
They got signed to this label that Clown from Slipknot started.
Okay.
And so in like 2006, they did Ozfest and stuff like that. But so I don't know what happened with the band, but they just kind of fizzled. They just put out a new record like a year ago, which I was like thrilled. But it was like Meshuggah meets like metalcore. Whoa. Like, yeah, or like Meshuggah meets Deftones. I don't know. It was like with like screaming, like crazy stuff. But like, I'll show you guys this one song. Just the intro is like stupefying and so sick. And it was 2006. Yeah.
Okay. Just a quick aside about that. For me, whenever I find a band that was doing stuff like that, like you said, and it was 2006, that there's a reason you said that. I'm like, every time I find that, I'm like, to me, that's like discovering a new life in the ocean or something. I'm like, oh, like it's always been there. I'm like, it gives me this hope for like the discovery of the musical world. I'm like, oh yeah, there's still so much unexplored territory that I don't know about. And I get to go through this whole crazy drum universe. Well, it's drums for me, but yeah,
yeah.
You get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, totally. And, you know, especially at that age, like everything sounds so new.
Yeah.
You know? And it's still like that feeling as we get older, I think becomes less and less frequent. Mm-hmm. So when we have that feeling, it's just like, oh, this is, thank you, God. Like this is it, you know? I'm not saying Gizmachi will give you that feeling, but I hope that you get like a glimmer of it.
Yeah.
This drum teacher that I had was just like, he was always listening to like the most cutting edge music. He still is. And he got me super, and I basically memorized every single song. For a while, I wanted to go to like Berklee or Musicians Institute, and I was going to audition with one of the songs. Mm-hmm. And I also got super into like Dragon Force and, you know, like, I mean, the drumming wasn't prog.
No.
But, you know, a lot of other elements were prog.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and at some point, you know, I got super into Animals as Leaders, which is like, to me, you know, the God tier band of all time. And I actually saw them with their old drummer. I haven't seen them with Matt Gartzka.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're in for a treat, my friend.
Dude, I want to so bad.
You missed the clinic at Base Mini East, right?
Yeah. I don't remember. I had something going on.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was.
He'll be back. But,
yeah, I was very bummed I missed it. Yeah.
It was, well, I'll tell you all the stuff that
please.
I learned.
Yeah.
I learned a lot.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Gartzka to me is like...
just a god.
Yeah, like he's, relative to his age, I think he's like the best drummer in the world. At that, you know, because there are drummers that are older than him that, you know, are probably more sophisticated, more capable, but like... I mean, he's probably, I don't know, 32 or something.
Yeah, Matt's like... just he's
like
the
Dumbledore of that genre of like time bending. He's someone that understands rhythm and just times more than anybody I've ever met.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's kind of the freakish thing about him is listening to him, especially it became clear during that clinic. Cause he's just started explaining how he thinks about it. He's like, well, yeah, we're doing this. And he played this shuffle and then he mentioned quintuplets and he said he goes through and he plays and he just like snuck them in there for a second. But if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't even notice. He's like, how many people noticed I threw those in? Like only a few people raised their hands. I'm like, yeah, because he made it sound so accessible and that's really the key. And that's where his head at is taking those abstract concepts and bringing them down to earth and being like, okay, here's how to actually apply them musically. So they're not just academic.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're
right.
I'm like this is application for like music that people can listen to and not want to blow their brains out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Dude, what's your favorite Animals as Leader song? Oh. I'll say like drum wise and then just like song wise.
Man. That's hard. That's
this,
really
this new
hard.
Stuff is just some of the best work.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna say because I'm really loving. My answer would have been different, but I really have been loving Red Miso.
Mm.
It's so good. It stole the throne from other things, which might have been first place. Mm. So, what about you?
Well, you know, I'm sad to say. Musically, I couldn't really get into the new record that much. I personally think, like, I connected with Animals as Leaders, like, emotionally before
drum stuff.
Yeah.
And so like the song on their first record, Point to Point, is just gorgeous. And like it just hits me so hard.
Yeah. That first record is really special.
It so is. Yeah. And a lot of the songs on that record, you know, are the guitar parts are singable, mm-hmm. you know? So I found with the most recent record, it felt to me a little bit more of like Tosin stretching his own limits and just like seeing how far he could go, potentially at the expense of like more melody and just like slightly more digestible stuff. Mm. So I owe the new record more attention, but it just didn't kind of grab me the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
So my favorite songs, my favorite drum groove ever from them is Physical Education.
I was going to say.
The sickest drum groove of all time.
It's so good.
It's so good. Every time, for some reason, when I go to Guitar Center, I play that groove on the electric kits, and I play it, like, really fast.
Yeah.
And, like, it just sounds so good, and it feels good. It's like,
The breakdown. Have you guys seen the one-handed drummer? He was on Drumeo a bunch, and he just did a drum cover. They posted a video of him playing that song.
Yeah,
it's got one arm, and he's just freaking playing it really well and like just crushing it.
I have no idea.
I should know his name.
So like he straight up doesn't use
like he's got like half an arm. Yeah.
Does he strap a stick to it?
No.
Or is it?
Oh, okay. It's just one hand. But what he does, they actually because Drumeo has this new like quiet practice pad for the kick pedal, and they modded that up so it's like sampling a snare hit. So he's using 2 feet for double bass and a snare.
That's sick.
And then it's just crazy.
Wow.
It's pretty inspiring.
That's amazing.
Check it out. But
I think the Def Leppard drummer does that, but
his playing is a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah.
Not quite as complex as Animals.
Right,
Def Leppard, but.
And so drum-wise, the groove from that to me is just like the sickest thing ever.
I love his faces and his emotion.
Yeah.
He's like inhaling the drums out of the tone. He's got this cool breath. I don't know how you describe it. It's really fun watching him play.
Yeah. To me, he's like a monk, you know?
Yeah,
like, totally. He's like enlightened behind the drums, you know?
Dude, you've got some good freaking emotion, too, when I've seen you. I mean, I just played that one gig, but you're freaking laying it down. And like,
that's
definitely part of it, too. Is that something that you've tried to do, like, as you're playing with bigger artists, or just that's just like a natural thing that happens?
That's so funny you say that. When I first started playing with this band, Lithium, my best friend now, his name's Drew, funny enough, he lives here. We still make music all the time. And he was like a guru mentor, because he was a little bit older than me. And he was always pushing me to like do more and be better. And when I first started playing with this band, Lithium, I played like this. And just like, you know, I was like, I was like 13 and just, I don't know. I was like,
you're just head down.
Yeah.
Playing the parts.
Like stone faced, insecure. And he said, he was like, you know, like you need to be fucking Drew or something like that. Like, like don't just be Drew, you know? And so, and at the time,
like what?
Yeah. And, at the time I was watching Travis Barker and Joey Jordison. And especially Joey Jordison, I didn't understand how he moved so much while playing. Like, it seemed like another form of a polyrhythm, you know?
Mm.
But something just, like, clicked in me when Drew said that. And I suddenly just kind of, like, I don't know, found my spirit, I guess? I don't know. But, so ever since then, ever since that conversation, I've just been like, you know, I can't even explain it, but I know that I light up when I play, and I feel like when I play, other people can like sense that spirit.
It's infectious, you know? Not even just the other band members, I'm sure, but from an audience perspective.
Yeah, totally.
It's super important. Matt Halpern from Periphery, he does a clinic on that.
Really?
Yeah, just all about, you know, not just playing the parts, but really getting your body into every movement, and it'll make you sound better too. And he also has a thing about being super relaxed and kind of like a Dave Elitch and like a mentality mindset.
Yeah.
He plays incredibly relaxed, and he's also super flexible.
Yeah.
Hey, Halpern?
I was just, the one time I've ever met the guy, I just was asking him like, how, you know, does he stretch before before he plays, and he was just like, yeah. And he just like did this stretch, and it just, like, his hand went all the way. I'm like, whoa, crazy. He's super, his hands are super duper flexible.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm like, that made me, I'm like, oh, I really need to
know. And he does those ice baths too, you know?
Does he?
Those?
He does. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big part of his routine.
Yeah, I like Wim Hof, but not that much.
I just did my first ice bath for 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Oof, my goodness, they are so unpleasant.
But
how long were you in there?
2 minutes.
Okay.
Nice.
And that was enough. I was I was definitely like full shaking.
I want to do that.
You know what?
Did you go somewhere, or did you literally just?
I just did it in my bath at home. Yeah. Just dumped a big old 10-pound bag of ice in there, and I jumped in, and
it's 2 a.m. after Broadway.
You will have no inflammation left, my friend. Let me tell you,
with your
you
cat
can't.
On you.
Yeah. On my head.
Yeah. That's how I picture you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I did cryotherapy once, like just to try it.
What is that?
Like,
I know what that is.
It's like you stand up in this chamber and they basically shoot
like sub-zero air at you.
Yeah, basically. it's like you're being surrounded by like dry ice or something, and they're like shooting it at you. It's fucking awful. like afterwards, I didn't even feel like, oh, I'm glad I did it. I was just like, I'm never doing this again. It was terrible.
Yeah, I thought about that. I was like, I was thinking about doing it, but then I'm like, all the research I found just seemed to show that just an ice bath was so much more effective for all the stuff. Like, well, you want to get rid of inflammation. I'm like, it's going to get into your body so much better if you're just actually touching freaking crazy cold water. Like that's just how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. The cryo thing was just like, it was painful. Yeah. And it was actually scary because, the guy that, you know, was helping me, like he was talking to me to kind of keep my mind off of it.
Yeah.
But my body started shaking so hard that I couldn't control it.
Yeah.
And I was trying, you know, like watching my breath and all that stuff, but like, it was just impossible.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Did they like stop it? Was it like a
I made it the whole time. No. Like I toughed it out, but it sucked.
You have to do something with your hands, right? I can't, like, because
I don't remember.
It's like kind of, it can be dangerous for your fingers. Is that right?
Well, they gave you like gloves and something for your feet to protect your extremities. Yeah. But yeah, it was brutal. Jeez. But dude, you mentioned Dave Elitch. I took a couple lessons from Dave.
Oh, nice.
I was talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, like one thing he said blew my mind. I was like playing, and as I'm playing, he's like, stop. And he's like, take your tongue from the, like, off of the roof of your mouth and relax your jaw. He's like, play again. And he's like, that was way better. Huh. And I didn't realize, but like, I was carrying all of this tension.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like, I definitely have that.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, and he's mentioned that. He's like, for some reason, I have kind of a gift for that particular thing. Like, I can kind of look at a person and be like, oh, hold on, try this, and that'll make them kind of reset.
Dude, it was wild.
I want to take a lesson for that reason. I'm like, I know there's tension in there, and I want somebody to be able to go, there, here, it's there, do this, because I'm like, I can't, yeah.
We're not aware of that. Yeah.
No, and it was cool because, I mean, I think Dave is like, he is certain about what he thinks is best.
Yes.
Especially with like burying the beater and stuff. Like,
yes, he's quite certain.
Yeah. Well, I bury the beater.
Yeah.
I like it. And like every pocket player that I know of in the world buries the beater, or almost all of them.
Yeah.
Like Jeff Porcaro, Tony Royster Jr., like, you know, Nate Smith, like all of these guys that are like gods. You know? But learning how to not bury the beater is awesome.
Yes.
You know? And like being able to do it or not. For me, I got a lot out of that from him.
100%. You know? And I literally, not this last week, but the week before, was going through that exact thing with a student. Like, you never want it to be something you can only do. You want it to be a decision.
Yeah.
I'm like, because I do like the sound of a buried beater, but I don't want to be forced to do that. Because I'm like, well, because if I don't do that, I can't balance myself. Like, nope, I need to have balance based on something else.
Mm. Wait, so do you typically bury it or no?
I've kind of stopped, but I'll still do it for certain things. But I don't I don't do it as much. I used to do it. I had to. It was the only way I could play. But now, right. Actually, a lot of the time I won't.
Interesting. What about you, Dan?
I feel like I do most times. Yeah. I don't really think about it, though. So,
well, like, dude, for me, yeah. So I took a few lessons with Dave, and I worked really hard on not doing it. And for a while, I wasn't.
Yeah.
I've come to believe that, for me, burying the beater, it almost, I feel like it really helps with pocket, because the way I look at pocket is, it's like, if the pocket is where the beat lives, there are certain, like, you can stretch, but you can't go beyond the material of the pocket, right?
Right.
So, like, when I have a bass drum, it's almost like that's where part of the pocket is. And so, like, I can, like, I can't explain it, but it almost feels, like, comforting to, like, have it there.
Hmm.
You know, it's almost like a physical representation of one side of a pocket, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of yeah, I think so. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Kind of like, maybe it's also the texture of the tone of that instrument. Like, it's a very transient versus, like, a, you know, the tone of a tom or a floor tom, whatever.
Mm. Yeah, true.
Like, it has to just be, like...
Yeah. Like, I feel like...
The foundation of that pocket.
Yeah. And also, I mean, yeah, there's, like, burying the beater just has a certain cool tone that is different from not. But I guess, personally, when I'm not burying it, I feel, like, less balanced for some reason, you know? But, yeah. But
yeah, agreed.
But I am excited for an opportunity where, like, I have to play, like, AC/DC or something, you know? And then I'm just like, you know, that beater will not be buried.
We'll do, like, an Instagram story poll on our listeners, see if they bury or not bury.
Yeah, Stuart Copeland buries the beater.
Does he?
He's, like, one of my also huge influences. He's just, like, a god.
Yeah. As he should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about choices that nobody else would make. Dude, just Message in a Bottle is a freaking drum clinic on just, like,
the nuance.
Making choices that no one else would have.
His hi-hat work and the dynamics. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I just saw him with the Nashville Symphony.
So did I. Think, yeah. Yeah, we talked about that. I think I was there, like,
what'd you think of that show?
Oh, my God. It was, like, just – it was beyond good. I can't even, like
– I've never seen him anywhere, so it was just, like,
neither have I, coolest – Yeah, I mean, he's the most musical drummer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
No question.
Okay, so now we've talked about Stuart, Travis, and a few other... If you had to put a kind of a lineup of the guys that are most influential to you, who would those guys be?
Yeah, great question. Well, how do I say this? In, like, the trajectory of our lives, we still are influenced by these people in the beginning. Like, that'll never go away.
Yeah.
But currently, the focus, you know, is on whatever this new thing is. So, currently, I would say, well, being that I play more, like, commercially, like, Rich Redmond is huge for me.
Yeah.
Like, there is no better, like, Nashville drummer than Rich, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And also Near Z, like, just another, like, the Room for Squares record is just godly.
Yeah.
I take lessons now from Mark Poise. So this is actually kind of a cool thing. So Mark plays for Tyler Farr, and he's played with Lindsay L and other people, like, even bigger shows. I just don't remember the names. But he went to UM School of Music, like, world-class education. Mark is a little older than me, and when I was young, he used to work at my local drum shop. But I never...
In Florida?
Like, yeah, South Florida. Resurrection Drums is what they call it. Wow. And I never, like, spoke to him. I would just see him around. And, like, 10 years after that, I was in this kind of prog band, and our bands played a show together, but we barely talked. But I recognized him because I was like, oh, that's the guy from the drum shop. And we played in Gainesville, Florida, which is, like, 5 hours away from the drum shop. So when I moved here, I had a whole list of things that I wanted to get better at. Because I was playing in this rock band that I didn't think was going to do well.
Yeah.
And I still have it in my phone. It was like, get better at reading music, get better at tuning drums, get better at, like, all these, you know, pro things.
Yeah.
And so I hit up Evan Klein from Resurrection Drums, and I said, hey, like, I'm in Nashville. Who should I take lessons from? And he said, oh, dude, Mark Poise, 100%. So I looked him up, and I was like, shit, I know this guy already, you know, even though, like, we didn't know each other.
Yeah.
So.
That's so funny. He just kept becoming a part of your life.
Yeah.
You didn't realize it.
Yeah, like, in and out. Yeah. It's crazy. And so I've been taking lessons now on and off with Mark for, like, I don't know, since 2016 or 17.
Yeah.
And so he turned me on to the book New Breed, which, you know, is just like, it's like boot camp, you know, it's like however good you think you are, start New Breed, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with that. Is that a music themed book or is it more about?
Yeah. It's a drum, a drummer. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You gotta check out New Breed is the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll change.
It's going to kick your ass. Hard.
It will. Please. It will. And you will be very grateful for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And all of the guys, all of the dudes, you know what I'm talking about?
Gary Chester?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dope.
Yeah. So, that book was a huge influence more recently, just in like tightening up my limbs and, you know, making everything more together. And then when I started playing with Josh, Mark recommended Future Sounds, which I saw over there.
Yeah, yep.
You know, and dude, that book to me is more prog than anything.
Yeah.
Like
you get into those permutations and you're like, this is prog all day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And like in general, I think like funk drumming just like doesn't get the recognition of that because it's so, I don't want to say complicated, but it's so, I don't know. I don't even know how to say it. Not involved. It's just, it's fucking awesome. Yeah. And it's like,
go with that.
It is involved. No, yeah. It is. That's, yeah, I mean, that is, that's
dude,
correct.
The syncopation and the ghost notes and like the, all of that stuff. Yeah. So I got super into that. And now, I got to think, I don't even know. I really like Luke Holland a lot.
Yeah. We talked about him before.
Yeah. Yeah. I've learned a lot, from him. He's like, I think I said this to you, Dan, he's like the master of taking a fill that sounds literally impossible, but the way he plays it is like really, not really easy, but like way easier than you think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet like lately I've just been listening to more, you know, professional type drummers, you know, the people that like have the intangibles, like the groove and the feel and
yeah. Jim Riley's and Rich Redman. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. For good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to drummers like Matt Gartzka, where I'm thinking like trying to figure out what he's playing and that kind of thing, yeah. You know? Yeah. But my ear will always be, you know, pulled towards like more progressive stuff.
Yes.
Kind of related to that, you mentioned back when you were talking about when you first moved to town and you kind of had this list of things that you wanted to get better at. And again, that go-getter attitude, you just kind of made it happen. Do you have any specific advice for new drummers moving to Nashville? Or just drummers in general that are trying to, you know, kind of do what you're doing and have the tour gig and play with a bunch of different artists.
Yeah. First of all, don't be afraid to say yes to anything and, you know, take the shot. Like when I was in this rock band, I had this vision of the band getting signed by a label who never saw us play live. Like, because I had heard stories of that, like in the 80s, you're like, dude, they signed us off of one song. And I remember I was flipping through the LA Weekly in Chinatown, and I just saw an ad that said, new label seeking new acts, blah, 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 blah. I was like, this is probably bullshit. But I emailed them. And a week or two later, we were in this skyscraper talking to like the A&R guy.
Wow.
And we got signed before they ever saw us play.
That's wow. Unreal.
Yeah, it was nuts. Yeah. And it was just a fluke. So with things like that, like
you went for it.
Yeah. Or like my friend Josh that I play with. I don't know if this got lost initially, but you know, he came into my coffee shop, we became friends, his roommate moved out. And at the time I was living in a house with people that I loved. And they're still like some of my best friends in LA. But Josh was like, hey man, there's like an opening at my place. It'll save you money. It's closer to work. And I was like, okay, yeah. And it was only living together that I heard his music. And I told him, I was like, dude, you got to let me play drums for you. And so a year or two later, he said, hey, man, I have my first show You know, it's like 14 songs, blah, blah, blah. And I remember he said, you don't have to do it if you don't want to. And I was scared because it was backing tracks. And that was the first time. But I said, yes. And so.
And thank God you did.
Yeah, for real. And the shows that we played, first of all, the first show I played with him was one of my favorite shows ever. Because we played. So Josh is a CCM artist. And so we played. The first show we ever did was in this church that was converted from a church or converted to a church from a strip club.
Wow.
And it was like in a seedy part of Massachusetts. It was like seedy.
Talk about renewal.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And we played a free show.
Yeah.
And there were people right off the street that came and saw us. And they were so happy. Like, I can't even explain to you the euphoria that I felt playing this music to these people who were just like, you know, like celebrating.
Yeah.
And we played another show the night after, went great. And all because I said, yeah, Josh, I'll move in with you. Like I did my first bus tour with him, you know? So I'm not saying that, you know, if somebody that you don't know that well says, will you move in with me? You know, that'll be like the ticket. But in general, it's like, and when AJ texted me about his gig, like, hey, man, I have this last minute gig. There was a small part of me that was like kind of scared because it's a new gig. It's new material. I thought his material was like really good. I was almost intimidated. But I said, yeah, did it. And because of that, that one show that went well, like that was 2020. 2.5 years later, we're on the Kelly Clarkson show.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So like, don't be afraid ever. And
I love that.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. Like, I was telling you before this, you know, I kind of a similar situation. A lot of my gigs are last minute sub gigs. And I had a through my old roommate, it's always how these stories go, right? My old roommate is like producing for this band here in Nashville. They need a drummer. He remembered me, like same thing, like never heard of the group, never heard the music. I just, you know, next Saturday, East Room, I'm like, yes. Yeah. You know, does it pay? Great, you know. And because you never know where these opportunities may lie. Even if it's not with that group, it could be someone at that gig, could be another band member. They go off to another side project, but they remember that you killed it. Like, you just never really know. So it's always good to be open-minded and crush it, more importantly. Not just say yes to the gig, but do your homework and crush it.
Yeah, totally. You
know, be memorable.
It's funny, Near Z said, take every gig and play every gig like your life depends on it. For me, that's like a little much.
A little extreme, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like that can actually make you more anxious than necessary, you know? But in general, like, saying yes to all these things, take lessons, because no matter how good you think you are, there's somebody in town you can learn from, you know? And playing with Mark, dude, he whipped my ass into shape. And he's, like, the nicest dude ever, so it wasn't, like emotionally hard, but he got me started on New Breed. I didn't even really know what it meant to play behind the beat before I took lessons from Mark, you know? And like, I mean, we hear that all the time in Nashville, like lay back a little bit or, you know, push it a little bit, you know, like these things. And a lot of us that move here, we're the best in our town. So like we think.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Yeah. Like we think that like, oh dude, like I'm going to rule
this town.
Big fish,
small pond, and we come here.
Yeah.
It's like kind of start over some ways, you know?
And so taking lessons from somebody who not only is really, really good, but is also doing what you want to do. Like, and another thing, like Mark, he said, hey man, like we're rehearsing at Soundcheck. Come check it out. Cause I had never been there. And he let me play on his kit, like in the big Soundcheck room, you know? And I don't know, like that was just a small taste of what that life is like. And the last thing, I've actually been thinking about this a lot too, is like actually believing in yourself. Because
it's important.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it all starts from that, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you think that you have something unique to say or to express on your instrument or, you know, with whatever your craft is, that alone can fuel you more than money or fame. Like if you feel like you have something you want to say, or you feel like you communicate in a special way that other musicians can't do, having that self-belief will get you so far, you know, because that will give you the confidence to say yes, you know? Yeah. So I think that's like the most important thing. And I say that as somebody who doesn't always have that, you know, but I try to like remember that, you know, because I believe that about myself. I'm sure you guys do too.
Yeah.
You know?
It's great advice.
So, yeah.
Love it.
Love it.
Well, guys,
this has been great.
Thank you for having me.
Of course,
I want to come back ASAP.
Yeah, we have
so fun.
That's great.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast. If you liked it, please consider leaving us a review on the Apple Podcast app.
Also, check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast.